Rocky, that's quite a statement piece.
Is someone going to fall in love with this thing? I don't see myself falling in love with an artificially intelligent being. However, Brandon, you did say that were you not married, she might have got you.
I said I felt the pull of the thing.
Biden is going to do a debate. I've never seen a presidential debate that wasn't a complete clown show.
I think both candidates should do 3 hours on Rogan,
yes.
Ideally.
Sort of like clickbaity title is Testosterone Makes You Gay. Got a lot of people butt hurt, but I think it's...
Brandon, thoughts on the roided out guys heading to the gay bar? He sounds so like almost defeated by this topic. What's up, guys? Welcome back to the pod. We have an incredible special guest with you today. John Coogan returning to the pod. Say hi to John Coogan. Hi, John.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming, as always. We've also got, for the first time today ever, you probably know him from the Daily Takes, Riley from the Pirate Wires team is coming in to do a little bit of reporting on Roaring Kitty and the whole meme stock return, which is exciting. He actually wrote a take about it this week, but we're going to get him on. We're going to talk about it. Let's just get into the show. First up, we got to talk about AI girlfriends. So it was a huge deal. Monday, I guess last Friday, we knew that there was going to be some kind of a huge announcement at OpenAI. The Associated Press said it was going to be a Google search competitor. And at the time I wrote, you know, probably this isn't true because that, they don't get anything right. And Sam said, that's not true. It's going to be something else, but it would be very exciting. Didn't know quite what it was. I was hoping it was going to be porn, not because I want it, but because I think that's going to be really interesting for the discourse once OpenAI starts generating like endless amounts of porn, which they're planning on allowing people to do. But what it was instead was something we all kind of have been waiting for and then finally saw, which was, if you've seen the movie Her, it was that. It's like an AI assistant that sounds like a person that can interact with your physical world in terms of, well, maybe not interact with your physical world, that can look at your physical world and understand it and speak to you and reason, and pretty soon is going to be able to do things for you. So, I mean, now I'm speculating, but what I would love is an AI assistant that can go through my emails and tell me like when I talked to so-and-so and get me this piece of paperwork, fill it out for me, sort of do menial tasks. So, like, what about order me Uber Eats or whatever, like literally an assistant. Internet exploded, and not really because of the AI assistant part, not because of like, wow, I can't believe the computer can do this. People have basically gotten used to that. What they really freaked out about was the fact that the voice of the woman was kind of like a little bit sultry and maybe a little bit flirty, and it evoked like AI girlfriend.
I just need to know, do I look presentable, professional?
Well, Rocky, you definitely have the I've been coding all night look down, which could actually work in your favor. Maybe just run a hand through your hair or lean into the mad genius vibe.
I don't have a lot of time, so I'm just gonna throw this on. What do you think?
Oh, Rocky, that's quite a statement piece.
The idea of, am I gonna fall in love with this thing? Is someone gonna fall in love with this thing? Are the incels going to fall in love with this thing? And what does a world look like in which people are running around with AI girlfriends? Google followed on with another AI assistant the very next day. Their sort of release and demo was a lot stranger. There was a guy in weird rainbow colors chanting for something. I didn't double click in there, really. No idea why he was doing it. It was very clownish. It was very Google. But this stuff is coming. AI girlfriends, I guess, are right around the corner. I don't know. In the Pirate Wires group, we have a bunch of opinions here. I know that people sort of disagree on different points. Is this something that's going to happen? I guess like maybe we start with just what do you guys think about the demo generally, AI stuff generally, and then are AI girlfriends coming? And what does a world look like in which, you know, a non-trivial percentage of the American youth are shacked up with a fembot?
I mean, I think it's definitely going to happen. It's already happening. There was an interesting article in the New York Times by Kevin Roos, I think that's how you say his last name, where he dated a bunch of these different AI girlfriends, and he fell really, really hard for one that was kind of like a therapist bot. What's interesting is that, like, the quote that he used, it leverages this cognitive bias called the Barnum effect, which is basically there's these set of phrases that you can use that sound hyper specific to an individual person, but actually apply to, like, basically everyone. So if I say something like, you have a complicated relationship with some of your family members, you'll be like, oh damn, like, you know me. But really, like, everyone has a complicated relationship with someone in their family. Or like, you know that you're capable of better things than what you're doing right now. Like, everyone is a striver in some capacity. So most people will be like, that feels right. And if you go to like a tarot card reader or a psychic, they will exploit this. And AI is like perfect for doing these types of things. And when it hits you with one of these chat lines that are already out there on the internet, it feels very personal. And so you're just like, this is amazing. And that's why it's easier to be like a girlfriend or a therapist than to actually read your emails and tell you when you talk to someone. Because that's actually a task where there is a correct or wrong, right or wrong answer. But there really isn't when you're talking about, like, you know, do I have a complicated relationship with someone in my family?
I think it's interesting that it's Kevin Roos who's saying this. I wrote a whole ass piece. It's a chatbot. Kevin is the name of it. You guys should check it out.
It was a preview of GPT-4 wrapped inside Bing.
Okay,
Microsoft
right.
Kind of released it earlier. Well, it was Sydney. Yeah.
And so what's interesting about it was the Google. Was that what it was?
No, it was Microsoft. But Microsoft was ChatGPT under the hood. GPT-4.
Right.
They released it earlier through Microsoft, through Bing. And because they released it so quickly, you could kind of like break the model, jailbreak it, and get it to act like this kind of like angsty teen on Tumblr.
You didn't even have to jailbreak it. I think another thing that was happening back then, and it's hard to get any straight answers because in interviews, that's just not what you really get with the OpenAI team. It's just like, whatever. That's a whole other conversation for another day. But on this, my sense of what was happening was it was Googling itself or Binging itself. It was like reading about what other people were saying about AI. Like, imagine you train an AI to go review the news or something, or you train it on information that's on the internet. And most of that, when it comes to sentient AI beings, is like pretty terrifying, right? It's like a lot of fiction that we've written. It's a lot of nonfiction that we've written. There's not a lot there that's super utopian and friendly. And then especially in the question of Sydney, all of the press was negative. And so I wonder if maybe that's what was happening there as well, is that it was just researching itself and people were saying it was evil. And so it was like, I am a scary monster. I don't see myself falling in love with an artificially intelligent being. However, Brandon, you did say that were you not married, she might have got you.
I said I felt the pull of the thing, which is true. So my take on the AI girlfriend thing is not like, of course, it being like emotionally resonant, like convincingly so, that needs to happen for people to have AI girlfriends. But I think it's more like the type of person who would have an AI girlfriend is the type of person who will order DoorDash instead of going to the grocery store to get their groceries. Like, I think what OpenAI has done has like created a new path of least resistance to social interaction. Like, if you're trying to date previous to this model, you go on Tinder, which was the path of least resistance. It was easier to go on Tinder than it was to go to bars, for example, and actually meet people. I think now, if you want social interaction, you have this thing, GPT-4.0, that you can turn on, you can talk to her or him. I think that like the sex part is still not there. And I don't know. I think what's going to happen is that romantic love will be and can be separated from sex. And there's also like, you know, like sex is already solved in my opinion. You know, I don't know if you guys know what goon caves are, but like this, the whole like sex journey,
describe
digitizing sex.
You gotta just let goon caves sit there. Like,
I would go to the subreddit if anybody is brave enough
subreddit.
To. And then you'll learn what goon caves are. Goon caves are basically, they're men who They like plaster their walls and fill their rooms with images of porn and like pornographic stuff. And they like, they'll like jerk off, you know, like 10, 20 times in a row all day. And they feel like there's some sort of transcendent effect to this. They've like basically given up on life from my read. Anyways, I didn't mean to go all the way to Goon Caves right away, but my point is to say is like, this is just an easier thing to do to talk to somebody. And I think that's why this 4.0 has more potential to create AI girlfriends than anything else that we've seen so far in the AI space.
I think it's very interesting to say sort of we're already seeing pieces of this play out. And so it makes sense in a way, though I would disagree with the frame of it's like Tinder or something. I think Tinder, all the dating apps in general, lead to some sort of real world physical touch, or at least promise that, which is the draw to them, and then getting a signal from someone. It's always, that's the carrot, I think, there. Those separately and sort of interestingly are all down, right? The dating apps are in a sort of disaster moment right now, and that has to do with the fact that Zoomers are not having sex, which brings me to what I think this is really more like and what is probably actually happening here. It reminds me more of video games. And as video games become increasingly excellent and people spend more and more of their time playing them, I'm always shocked when I go and I look at the video game stats, just how many people are totally addicted to video games. Because I'm not because I'm above it, but because I know that I also addict pretty easily. I mean, when I started playing like Final Fantasy or something, that was it. Until I finished the game, I'll see you next week. So I avoid it generally, but a lot of people don't. And this feels very much like that, right? It's like the best Tamagotchi you ever had in your life. And I think that for a lot of people, maybe that would be the draw. But then that's the problem that I think that we need to address, is people being completely absorbed inside of the digital already. And it's like, this is just another version of that to me. I hope.
On the game side, that's a good point, Mike. I think I'm just imagining right now, like an app that ports in GPT 4.0 through an API and gamifies a relationship. So like you can get this far with her if you talk to her this many hours and you say the right things, you ultimately get to marriage with her. I think that type of app is definitely going to happen if it's not already in development.
I have like kind of a black pill, white pill here. Like the black pill is kind of like, you know, entertaining ourselves to death. This is something that people have written about, like the answer to the Fermi paradox. Why are there no aliens? Maybe all advanced civilizations eventually develop an AI that just entertains them endlessly. And we all go into kind of the matrix and sit there and talk to our AI girlfriends, but we all die off. And there's an interesting question behind that, which is like the AI doomers are worried about AI killing everyone. But like, if you look at the birth rate statistics, like it's possible like artificial intelligence is already killing some of us because it's limiting our ability to reproduce. And if you want to kill humans, if you just drop the birth rate low enough, eventually all the humans will be gone. Victory for the AI. But there is like a white pill side of this, which is like if everyone is talking to an AI girlfriend, you could actually learn an incredible amount of what that person is looking for. And then you could match people across the network to real people. And so Whitney Wolf Herd, the founder of Bumble, was in the news just last week talking about how like in the future, you'll have an AI that goes out and talks to everyone else's AIs. I think that's kind of unnecessary. I think the more interesting thing is you have an AI that you're talking to about what you're looking for in someone. It learns an immense amount of information about you and then matches you more effectively. Because when you show up to these apps right now, it's like, what, like height, gender, race, like a few interests, like a few answers to a couple jokes. It's wildly different to match someone if you have, you know, chat logs of them talking about what they're looking for in someone for, you know, hours and hours and hours of talking to someone, and you get that across the entire network. Now, the question is like, will this be equally weighted amongst men and women? Are there economic incentives for an AI girlfriend company to actually make real life connections? Because then they kind of lose the customer. There's a lot of, you know, kind of hairy things that could happen downstream, but there is the potential to take all the data that's collected through these AI girlfriends and use it to actually match people in real life, which would be amazing.
One question I want to ask Sanjana, actually, I realized that throughout this whole conversation, we keep saying AI girlfriend, and that is that's what we're talking about in the discourse. What is it? Why are we thinking AI girlfriend rather than AI boyfriend? Why is it so relentlessly that focus right now? And then also whatever else you may be thinking, but I just specifically, I'm wondering that now, and I think you might have an interesting insight.
I mean, I think it comes back to what you were saying, Mike, about how so much of our perception of what this AI is going to be is informed by like science fiction and films that we have. I mean, even the comparison between her and the OpenAI launch is, I mean, it's because in her there's an AI girlfriend, right? And they tend to use these female voices. I think because women, that people respond better to female voices or something like that. There's a lot of research on that.
All of our driving, what is it?
Voice-to-text.
Famously, what was her name? The girl, the woman who navigated for us. Anyway, yes, specifically Siri? Men and women perform or respond.
It's the voice of Siri.
More favorably.
That's who you're talking about.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a kind of ironic point that we always tend to think about the AI girlfriend and the incel case, because I do think there's a lot of research out there that suggests that women are more likely to engage in these like ficto-sexual relationships with fictional characters and have, you know, completely non-sexual, like, what is it called? When you form like a parasocial relationship with a celebrity or something, women tend to do that. I mean, they're the kind of like canonical fangirl who just devotes her life completely to her idol, which I could definitely see happening with this AI. I will say, I mean, I don't immediately think about AI girlfriend when I see this launch. I think about like AI tutor, and I'm excited about the possibility of this for like, you know, the example I was bringing up with Brandon is like, this could be a language tutor for you. And it could teach you a language and talk to you, or it could teach you, you know, something in advanced math or something like that. But I think with the her comparison, the thing people always forget is that in her, not everyone has an AI girlfriend. Like, he's kind of an anomaly, even with his friends. And I think that sort of speaks to this point that there's probably will be a portion of the population that is like disposed to having a completely AI relationship, but most people I don't think are. And for me, the most apt comparison is actually like widely available internet porn, where you have like broad uptake of some degree of porn, like lots of people watch it casually maybe. And of course, you know, there's very well-documented negative effects, but very few people are in goon caves. Goon caves are like a very specific niche, extreme demographic of people. And I think that AI girlfriends and boyfriends, because I'm sure they'll also crop up, will be a similar kind of like weird fringe phenomenon.
Well, first of all, on your tutor thing, I think it's a great thought. And I think that you're right. And I think a lot of people think that you're right based on the fact that Duolingo stock tanked after the release of, after the launch of the demo. And then I guess when it comes to the who will or who won't use it, or if it will be common, one thing I worry about with the porn stuff is that we don't really entirely know what the effects of that are. We know that people are having less sex. Young people are having less sex. We know that the birth rate is down. Correlation isn't causation, but while porn has always been around, no one has ever had so much access to porn. And I do wonder sometimes kind of what the effects of that are. And this, if it is that, would be just a much more difficult version to escape. But I want to talk about her for a second, because everyone keeps bringing it up. And I've written about her in the context of AI for years now. I'm glad that people are finally following Pirate Wires. It is definitely the apt comparison. It is what we're going to be creating. I saw people going after Sam Altman, who tweeted her after the launch of the demo. One guy in particular, Jeffrey Miller, he is an AI sort of, not a skeptic, he's an ex-risk person. He's terrified of the AI killing us all. And he said, you know, Sam, you fool, I'm paraphrasing here, her was a dystopian movie, the assumption being that people isolate and the AI is like this fake girlfriend and how sad or something. And it's not a dystopian movie. And it's not even about, in my opinion, a guy with an AI girlfriend. If you recall, the protagonist of that movie was a divorcee. He just got out of a really terrible, or I don't know if it was a terrible relationship, but a relationship that was important to him ended in a terrible way. And the AI girlfriend was his rebound. The movie concludes with him dating another woman. And the AI do a whole bunch of other crazy things and they leave the galaxy, I think. And I don't even know exactly what happens. It's like all pretty interesting, not super scary. And what you really have is an AI therapist. She's a girlfriend, but she's sort of a therapist helping him heal in this really awful moment. And so it's a utopian movie. I think it's maybe one of the only utopian depictions we have of artificial intelligence. And if it's something like that, I'd be super stoked. But, I
think that applies to Terminator also. All the AI do was always bring up Terminator. I watch Terminator and I'm like, oh, you mean the movie where the humans win at the end of every single movie? Like, what could be more exciting than fighting the AIs and winning? Like, no one's talking about that scenario where we go to war with the Terminators and we win. We'll feel so excited and united as a human species if that happens. It'll be amazing.
That's the take. That is a take. Last thoughts on AI girlfriends and the future of AI, and I don't know, is Google versus OpenAI?
I do think like using this as a language tutor, using it as an AI girlfriend, like the core GPT app is too general purpose for any of that. Like, people are going to create like spin-offs right now. Like, even the Duolingo thing seemed like maybe a little bit overstated, because like if you actually try to switch today, like, it would be pretty hard to fully switch. But the technology is clearly the future, and so I think that's why people are excited about this.
I think the question on my mind is like, are we going to be wearing this technology within 5 years? Because that's, I think that there's like, we went all the way to AI girlfriends, but like, if I'm wearing my Meta Ray-Bans, my Meta AI Ray-Bans, and so that the AI can see whatever I see, and I'm listening to her all the time, right? And like, let's say I'm like reading a news article and it's talking to me about what I'm reading. And a lot of people are doing that at the same time. Like, I actually don't know who you are anymore if that's what you're doing, because that's essentially like a layer over your own perception. It's like a filter. And it's also controlled by a corporation that's likely, you know, sort of exchanged some amount of, autonomy for the government for a regulatory moat, you know? And so you actually do, like, I'm not usually conspiratorial person, but like, you start thinking about mind control in this situation, and it actually seems like a possibility.
You know, yeah, I mean, that's going to happen in a couple months. Like, Apple's doing a deal with ChatGPT right now, supposedly. If that happens, it's going to be in your AirPods, like, as soon as they update iOS.
Do you also have to think about, I think it's not conspiratorial to ask yourself a question of what this technology will do to us. I don't want to say physically, I guess physically, your brain is plastic, right? How does it reshape us? What do we become after? And I want to, I always think back to, the navigation, what is it called? Map stuff.
GPS. Turn by turn.
So think about, I was in Barcelona recently, and I used to live there, and I somehow navigated those streets with a pay by the minute phone that did not have a map. I haven't navigated around a city without a map for a decade, and I could not remember how I got around in Barcelona. I think that we have lost something really important when it comes to just that one thing, the navigation thing. Some important part of our brains are atrophying, and what we're talking about now is not just navigation, which is an important part of being a human being, but sense making, and that's very new. It's a whole new kind of internet experience. When you look at something like the difference between search in the early 2000s and search in the 20-teens, or let's say social media in the early 2000s and social media in the 20-teens, we used to log on in the early 2000s and sort of direct our own search for information. And we would learn that way and develop interests and tastes, and we would go deep into various you know, niche places and discover things. Now we log on to the internet and are given things. And I do think that changes the way our brains work. This is going to change our brain. This is going to change our brains. This is going to change our minds. This is going to change the way that we think and that we, and the way that we interact with each other. I think that's a great addition, Brandon, and a good place to leave it for now, because this stuff is impossible to predict, but we will be here to talk about the AI girlfriends as they proliferate, and boyfriends, and probably more boyfriends. Sanjana, you said earlier that women in general seem to be more open to some of this kind of stuff. It's so true. It's also, I used to work in publishing. Romance novels are one of the biggest, they were then, but 15 years ago, I don't know what's going on today, but like romance novels were one of the most important parts of the publishing industry, and they were read almost entirely by women. Fictional romantic experiences, fictional characters, sort of, and by romance, I mean, a lot of this was like smut, like the like female porn was on the page. That was the popular version of like porn for women, basically. And I do think this is very adjacent to that. But I want to move on to, I don't know, I'm trying to like, I want to connect it. I don't know how I can connect it to AI girlfriends, but we just got to talk about Trump and Biden. So Biden is going to do a debate. These are the headlines. People are like, yay, everyone's, you know, how courageous. Biden challenged Trump to presidential debates. They're coming up soon. There's going to be one in June, I believe. And Trump immediately accepted, of course, because he loves debates and he loves attention and he's about to get a lot of it. And I looked a little closer. It's not, it's very weirdly framed as a courageous act. What's actually happening is Biden is saying he's not going to do the debates that people have been doing for, I don't know, like all of the modern history since debates normalized in the 70s, basically. So longer than any of our lives, closer to the election in the fall. And then there might be one in September, but they used to be much later. He's not doing that. Obviously, this is now my opinion, because he's senile, and there's a chance of him saying something, a very high chance of him saying a lot of things that are very stupid on stage, and he's hoping people are going to forget it by the time of the election. Now I think the take here that is common is sort of like, oh, just do the debates, like this is an important part of American whatever and norms, and what are you, scared of Trump or something? My feeling about the presidential debates is that they're totally useless. I've never seen a presidential debate that wasn't a complete clown show. It is just an idiot journalist asking either stupid or goading questions to two people who are much more important than the journalist, who then respond, only have what, a minute to respond. So they say nothing of value. And so I just, if this is the debate format on television, and it's like the medium is the problem here, it's TV. Ever since we've been televising these debates, it's like you have to appeal to a TV audience. There are commercial breaks and shit. I don't think there's any value in that at all. And so I'm not going to sit here and be upset that we're not going to have debates like we usually do, because realistically, they don't move the dial at all. I cannot think of a single time something important happened in a major presidential debate. I personally am going to enjoy live tweeting them because they're fucking ridiculous. But let's not delude ourselves. It's a circus. It's not like an educational experience. I don't know. What do you guys think about the debates?
I don't care about debates at all. I agree with you. I think that I will vote for whoever does a longer uninterrupted podcast appearance. I think both candidates should do 3 hours on Rogan.
Yes.
Ideally, I loved when Bernie went on there, Andrew Yang. I think it's a great format, and I think it's really, really good for just us to be able to just sit back and see how this person has a conversation for a couple hours. Doesn't have to be with Rogan, but I want multiple hours of uninterrupted conversation of them just talking about the world, their job, their history, everything. I was looking to see what the longest uninterrupted interview that Biden's done during his presidency. Because I figured like, yeah, sure, he's not going to go on Rogan, but like he might've done something that was like an hour long. The longest that I could find was just 20 minutes long. And ironically, it was on 60 minutes. but it's just like,
20, you said?
20 was the longest I could find.
That's crazy.
And I've heard these things are really, really scripted when you do them with those folks. Like we know Rogan's not scripted. And And so whoever it is, I just want to see, they don't like the actual debate and the back and forth doesn't matter as much as I want to see them just have a really long unedited conversation. And I would love to see that happen for both candidates. I think it'd be great.
So famously, we always go back to the dawn of the TV debate, which was Nixon and Kennedy. And the story is people listening to the debate thought that Nixon won, and people watching the debate thought that Kennedy won. Nixon was sort of sweaty and older, and Kennedy
was
like
sick at the time.
He was clammy. And then you had, the handsome Camelot Kennedy, just really looking great for TV. I like to contrast this with another famous debate that people often talk about in this moment, which is the Lincoln Douglas debates, which were not made for TV. These were like I think it might have been 6 hours of debating interrupted by like a picnic lunch. And so you have these people going out there giving long monologues on the way that they think about the world. And that is the important thing. As you mentioned, Coogan, it's long, uninterrupted periods of time where someone is sharing their thoughts. That is the only way. And this is why Rogan's good, not because Rogan is this genius interviewer, though I do think he's fantastic. It's because of the amount of time. You have so much time. You can't hide behind sound bites. You can't hide behind, omission. You have to just reveal who you are. There's no escaping it in that kind of a format. You have a lot of time. And that's what I would love. If we're going to do a debate that would be valuable, if people really cared about educating the public, you would see something along those lines where these candidates show up, they get 30 minutes of it's like a 30-minute opening statement, and then you have a 15-minute rebuttal. Maybe you go back and forth in that way on topics. I'm not sure exactly, but it's long periods of time. It's not a combat zone, because that's also it's fun. Again, I will be live tweeting the Donald Trump versus Joe Biden war, but it's combat. It's not actually a demonstration of how great their policies are, how competent of a leader they are. It's just one thing that they can do, which is perform on a stage. And it's that you want that long thing, that you want that uninterrupted, here's my brain, just judge it kind of opportunity.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to get thrown curveballs and you're going to be out of your depth. That's the criticism that people always lay on these like 3-hour podcasts, is that after a while it's like, why is this doctor talking to me about working out or whatever, something that they're not an expert in? But that's exactly what I want to see, because I anticipate that the president is going to get thrown a curveball, and all of a sudden it's going to be like, you got to go figure out the problem in New Zealand. And maybe this person isn't an expert in New Zealand, but all of a sudden, like, how do they respond to those curveballs? That's actually valuable. It maybe is a little less valuable when it's just some random pundit, who's talking about random stuff. But for the president, it seems perfectly valid.
Sanjana, debates. How are you feeling about the June debate?
I mean, I will watch any debate Trump's in, because I think he's hilarious and he commands a stage. But I agree that the televised debate format has always been superficial. It's always been just a way for people to kind of form, immediate judgments about someone based on their appearance. I mean, the Nixon Kennedy debate kind of set the stage for that, I think. And I like the idea of the podcast. I would imagine that they wouldn't, these candidates probably wouldn't agree to go on anything but like a softball podcast where they could review the questions in advance, and they would probably choose the moderator. But I still think that would be a more like, the thing I'm interested in is like, why do we still have this outdated television paradigm that we're using that was developed in the 60s? It was made for a time when you had 3 TV channels and everyone was watching them. It's 2024. People are listening to podcasts. At least I don't think we're going to get a substantive Lincoln Douglas style debate out of either of these two people, because I think they're both too mentally feeble to think on their feet in that way, or to speak extemporaneously for extended periods of time. I mean, Trump probably could, but it's unclear whether or not it would all be, in a logical sequence. But I think at least updating the format would be a welcome change. And it'd probably be pretty entertaining.
Yeah, so, if we want to update the format, we should just lock both of them in a room with cameras, no moderator, 3 hours, and we just get to watch them talk to each other. I think that would be very interesting to see.
Yeah, maybe
that's something I would watch.
We have to trick them into it. So they get stuck in an elevator together.
Exactly.
Randomly,
that's what I want to see.
And then you just shut it down.
Yep.
And that's it. Sorry, guys. You're stuck in there for 6 hours.
Oh, I mean, it's already a joke. Let's turn the presidency into a prank show, basically. You know, Jamie Kennedy pops out at the end of this.
I mean, we are just electing. I had a dream that
clown.
I had a dream that Taylor Swift became the president. And I remember feeling not confused even. I was resigned to it. She was the president. I didn't even know she was running for president. And I thought, well, I mean, that's just what it is now. Like, that's just what it is. And no one was upset. Everyone's like, what are you going to do? Taylor Swift's the president.
People have been going for this for a long time.
I remember not only that, but I thought to myself, like, come on, like, why Taylor? Like, if you're going to pick a powerful, whatever celebrity, like, couldn't it be Oprah? Like, if you just go with that option. And that was my train of thought in the dream.
Like,
we're totally beaten down. At this point, as a nation, our expectations for the president are so low that we would accept almost anything. And it's crazy to me because all you really have to do to get some great candidates in there is offer them a ton of money. Just make it like $20 million a year or something crazy like that. I mean, we're blowing it on all sorts of dumb shit. Why not the presidency? Do you know how many awesome people, everyone great would run for president? We would have a real contest at that point if there was what potentially $80 million on the line. I mean, I think that's the problem. Like, what is the incentive to be president? There's no financial incentive unless you're totally a monster and very good at fraud. There's only fame or power. And so that's what we attract: crazy fame, like egomaniacs, Trump, and then horrifying creatures who want power. And that is, it's just like incentives shape the world, and the incentives for the presidency are very bad.
Brandon, you got anything?
Anything for that, Brandon?
I remember the debate between Trump and Hillary. And I also remember watching the debate between Biden and Trump, and both felt like moments of national humiliation for me. I felt like embarrassed. It's very undignified for them to bring the country through that. And I don't see how that this time is going to be any different. I'm thinking about what are the benefits to the candidates themselves of going through this debate? It's not clear to me why Biden thinks it will help him to debate Trump. I can see why Trump would probably get a bump after this because he'll just come out looking a little bit smarter and more put together than Biden. But I don't understand like the benefit calculus that their teams are running on this. Like why do they even do it? You know, like what's the benefit to them? I don't totally get it.
I hate making predictions like this. I think it's really hard to know it's really hard to know what's going to happen here, but I would not be surprised if there were no debates. Biden asked specifically, the team is demanding mic cuts and no audience. So Trump loves an audience. He actually said specifically, I forget verbatim what it was, but it was something really ridiculous. Like it adds like an exciting environment or something. Like he just wants to perform before a crowd. That one, I think
he's doing stand up.
He said excitement level.
He's doing bits.
Yes. Right? So
bits.
And that one, I think he might tolerate not having, but the mic cuts would be designed to silence him. And I think that might be significant enough that he would not do the debate if it happens. So I wonder if maybe the Biden administration will just make a bunch of demands that Trump won't say yes to, and that'll be that. But I agree, there's no benefit at all for Biden. There's only the potential for major gaffes. The problem, perhaps, that he's looking at, or really his handlers are looking at, is he's plummeting in the polls. So he has to do something. His policies are not popular. Inflation is still a problem. And no matter how many times the left economists tell us like, oh no, everything's actually good, the economy's great, you just don't care, maybe there's some truth to that. He's not popular. So he's got to do something. And maybe he just thinks at this point, maybe his whole team thinks at this point, like, might as well, it can't get any worse. But I think like, if that's the feeling, why did they even why not step down and have another person run? I just don't understand what they're doing over there.
Did you guys see that video today of, I think you actually posted this, Mike, the that banking executive talking about how bank failures, like more of them are basically imminent.
And
like,
yes, Balaji had quote tweeted it and was talking about it.
I expect that we're going to have more bank failures. I don't see rates coming down, you know, this year. So if you keep having rates up where they are right now, a lot of those financial institutions have negative equity on a mark-to-market basis. And, you know, once there's a run on the bank, you know, the FDIC has got to step in and take it over. So I think we're going to see more bank failures this year than we did last year.
Biden is fucking cooked. like imagine if there's one bank failure, like around October, you know, like it's over for Biden.
He's not going to allow that to happen. There's no way he's going to allow a bank failure before, I just don't think there's any way.
But what do you think about the idea, the hypothetical of a double down presidency, which is where your first term is 4 years, but if you get reelected, your second term is 8 years. I think that would really change the conversation because the age thing would be a bigger deal. And it's like, you've already seen this person in action for 4 years. If you go back and vote for them again, like you must really love this person.
Yeah, it's a high
degree. Then they have more time to work, to do something impactful.
I think if Trump wins again, there's no way that he's not going to say something, even just in a trolley way. He's going to say something at some point that's like, I'm allowed to run for again because I haven't had eight consecutive years. The law. But like he's definitely going to say something like that. And we are going to have a week of news about the dictator of Donald Trump. There's no way that we don't. I want to move on. Sanjana, you wrote a fantastic piece about, I want to say tea makes you gay, testosterone makes you gay, but I know I can't think of it now, the synthetic tea. Basically, trend. Thank you. Something that I noticed as well, and we talked about it. I saw that I realized that you were very interested in it. You had a bunch of background. You did a bunch of research on it, wrote a fantastic piece. This weird trend of bodybuilders reporting like new homosexual feelings after taking steroids, basically. And I sort of was legitimized for me when Plates Not Dates talked about it. I was like, oh, there must be some, and I listened to the episode. It was interesting. But you wrote the whole piece and you did the research. Tell me the truth about steroids making us gay.
Yeah, I mean, I will start by making a distinction because people have been very pedantic about this in the reaction. I mean, the piece is basically exploring two connected phenomena. So the first phenomenon is male bodybuilders who take something called trenbolone, which is a anabolic steroid. It's like basically a synthetic androgen. It is like three times as potent as testosterone, but it binds to your androgen receptors. And they report that it makes their libidos skyrocket. So people, you know, trend-induced rage and risky sexual behavior is very well documented. But some people say it also makes them want to sleep with usually trans women. Straight men say that tren makes them want to sleep with like she-males, trans women, whatever you want to call them, or with men. And then separately, but relatedly, female to male trans people, so trans men, say that taking testosterone makes them more attracted to males.
So these are
so you have a lot of
biological females who then become men who were previously lesbian.
So you have lesbians who take lesbians or you know, whatever, bisexual women who take testosterone and report that it makes them exclusively attracted to men or very attracted to men. And then you have heterosexual males who take tren and say that it makes them very attracted to men as well. And so the kind of funny, whatever, it's sort of like clickbaity title is testosterone makes you gay. But really the overarching sort of point of commonality here is like, it seems like these anabolic steroids, synthetic testosterone and trenbolone, are inducing attraction to men in both males and females, which is interesting, and got a lot of people butthurt, but I think it's and I'll resist a joke there, but it yeah, it's a very interesting phenomenon, and there's not a ton of scientific research out there substantiating it, but there have been some studies of like female to male trans people that find that testosterone changes their sexuality, all based on self-reported data. And then there's also quite good data that's found that homosexual men are more likely to take anabolic steroids than heterosexual men.
Well, that is easily explained. That's just like, they want to look like Ken dolls. The weirder one is the way that a sexuality might change. Again, most of it does seem to be anecdotal, but you see it everywhere. And there are these very limited studies, like you mentioned. I think one, I mean, tabling the straight guys who want to have sex with trans women thing after steroids, the idea of basically a lesbian taking a shot and becoming not a lesbian, but now looking like a man, is very interesting, because I am not actually sure who, I know everyone's going to be mad about it, but I'm not, it doesn't, but the anger doesn't clock to sort of standard political lines, because this is sort of a gay cure, maybe, but also yeah. You're becoming a man. And then how weird to be a lesbian who ends up just staying gay, but now as a man. Anyway, a lot of weird things there. But the fact that it's so confusing politically, it's one of the things I find the most fascinating about it. Everyone is sensitive about this. I mean, what do you make of that part? The fact that it just seems to transcend typical political, I guess, bounds, political arguments. It doesn't graph to anything in the discourse in a sort of obvious way. And I don't know. What do you make of that part?
Yeah, I mean, I think this pisses people off across the political spectrum for a variety of reasons. The first reason, I think, is because the contention that sexuality is fixed at birth, and is immutable was such a central contention of the gay rights movement, right? This was like the you're born this way thing. I think for lesbians in particular, this is not a phenomenon that is very welcomed, because some of the people who are saying that they previously identified as lesbian and are now attracted to men sort of retroactively are explaining that as, you know, maybe they had some sort of trauma that prevented them from wanting to be with a man or something like that, which plays into ideas that maybe some women identify as lesbian because of sexual trauma. And yet it does still suggest that sexuality on the other side of the spectrum, where people might want to say that sexuality, homosexuality in particular, is like has no biological basis or is entirely psychosocial, this is actually suggesting maybe there is some kind of chemical basis, or that you could induce it if you just give people enough of a libido boost. Maybe they, I mean, my personal read on this is maybe if you just make people horny enough, they want to have sex in the most available way possible. And it just happens to be a lot easier to sleep with men in many cases than with women. I don't know. That's like just a sort of working theory. But it's definitely something that pisses people off across the spectrum. Yeah.
Brandon, thoughts on the roided out guys head into the gay bar? You sound so like almost defeated by this topic.
No. I don't know what to think about it. I mean, I'm not seeing, so what I'm seeing in our mentions and our Twitter accounts mentions is I don't see any pissed off lesbians in the mentions. It's all, I think, people who understand trend and are in sort of the bodybuilding world who think that we got some facts wrong or are displaying some level of cope or something like that. So that's what I'm seeing. I think one interesting part about this is, and I think Sanji and Mike, you both kind of touched on it, but the being gay is not a choice thing was really important 20 years ago, and maybe even 15 years ago for gay rights. Like there was a utility to that meme, so to speak. And now I feel like nobody cares anymore whether being gay is a choice. Like I'm not seeing people, you know, rage against that implication of this article, which is that you actually could maybe change your sexuality. We ran another piece that implied the same thing or was actually explicit about the same thing, which is Rivers' Coomer conversion therapy, which was the subject of which was these guys who were watching sissy hypno porn in an effort to turn themselves from gay to straight. And the whole thesis of that piece was, could you actually turn yourself straight if you're gay, if you try hard enough? And we didn't get angry reactions from gay people defending that position that being gay is not a choice. And I think that's just interesting that we're not, that meme or that position is no longer useful in the conversation.
I think it's just confusing now because the fundamental people are fundamentally what they are. Even, you know, Gaga's Born This Way is probably ironically the end of that meme. Everything yeah. after that is you decide what you are and can become anything, regardless yeah. of biology. And this is really speaking to the conflict, which is a deep conflict within the sort of LGBTQ arena, between homosexual men and women. And I want to say trans, but it's more complicated than that. It's all of the other weird shit in there besides the trans stuff. So, you know, you have your agender and your bigender and your demigender. And I mean, all the weird stuff. This is a kind of thinking that, while I do think very niche, like I've never met someone in person who's like a blue gender or something. These are people that you sort of only meet online, but they dominate the conversation and they really represent fundamentally different things. So because they've sort of been winning the conversation, I think that at this point, there's not, no one really knows how to have this conversation on the T stuff, which is interesting. I also think on the pushback, probably the bigger thing that's happening there on the pushback is like most of the guys who are taking Tren don't have this experience of wanting to have sex with men and they feel an affront, you know, like don't tell me I'm gay. I think there's an interesting gender thing here where men in general in culture feel, and I think for a lot of good reason, attacked by the media. They think that anything that has to do with masculinity is constantly assaulted. You have toxic masculinity as a slogan, and then any sort of typically male characteristic, including working out, just like the concept of working out. Famously, over the last few years, a handful of articles saying, you know, working out is coded right wing, it's coded fascist, things like this. I think that they looked at this title, Testosterone Makes You Gay? ? And they are thinking, this is a group of people who are saying the hormone most associated with masculinity is bad or something. Yeah. And that's what they're reacting to. They think that you're saying that this chemical is like toxic, and that's not what you were saying, but that's the cultural terrain, I think. And that's what
I think that's an appropriate response to, in a way, if you don't read the article, because, you know, we actually published another article about testosterone a few months ago that if you read it, it's just called, it's called Testocalypse. And if you read it, it's by Jordan Castro. He there's a whole section on how the media has covered T in the past, like 5 to 10 years. And they connect it to Nazis. They connect it to white supremacy. They connect it to toxic masculinity. Like everything about T is bad. And this headline definitely, I could see how one would interpret this headline as in that lineage.
I guess now, I mean, I want to transition into another It feels like a testosterone heavy space. It is the space of day trading and meme stocks. It is the very first appearance of Riley. What's up, Riley? Riley works for Pirate Wires. He, you'll see him in the takes if you subscribe to the Pirate Wires Daily, which you absolutely should. Please subscribe right now if you don't. Tell your friends to subscribe if you do. Riley's here today to break down the news surrounding the one and only meme stock kitty. Break it down.
Sure thing, can do. So I'll try to keep the breakdown part like as neutral as possible because I know we have a lot of diehards, both in the pro kitty, Wall Street bets, apes together strong kind of camp, and also in sort of like the anti-kitty, like, you know, he's a fraudster, how dare he ruffle feathers sort of camp. So just to refresh everyone's memory about who this guy is, what sort of the whole GameStop short squeeze of 2021 was about. So Roaring Kitty, also known on Reddit by the name Deep Fucking Value, is a Massachusetts man by the name of Keith Gill. I know, right? But he became most well known through posting YouTube videos and on the subreddit Wall Street Bets. He is in real life a chartered financial analyst for several finance companies. Ended up working at Mass Mutual, where in 2019, when he's posting on Wall Street Bets again, he begins to sort of lay out the case for buying GameStop shares, which back then were like $1 a share. He said, look, these are super undervalued. And critically, you have people like short selling the stock, which is essentially placing a bet that the stock will fail. So I'm not going to get super deep into what a short squeeze is because not a financial expert, but basically the people trying to short the stock end up having to buy shares at a higher price because of all these individuals posting on Wall Street Bets, which only drives the price even higher. And that's what you sort of start to see. So the price of GME shares are like $1 at the start of 2020. By the end of the year, they're up to like $5. But they really hit their peak in January 2021. And this is when the whole GameStonk saga like really starts to take off. And yeah, this is just when tons of people start buying up GameStop shares, as well as similar like meme stock shares like AMC. But eventually it results in a peak of GME hitting around $500 a share. So just exponential growth, all prompted by this guy, Roaring Kitty. And there's a lot of other factors at play here. So this is like peak pandemic. Stimulus checks had just gone out. So people had a lot of like money to spare. But in total, he ends up making like $40 million off of this. The hedge fund that was shorting the stock, Melvin Capital, they end up needing like rescue funding just to stay afloat. Eventually, Robinhood restricts trading altogether, which is sort of what brings this whole craze, I guess, like to an end. But when all is said and done, it's not all smooth sailing for Gill. He eventually has to testify before Congress that this wasn't some like complex scheme, that this was just a guy who liked a stock. So that's what he does before Congress. His employer even gets fined $4 million, Mass Mutual, because they weren't supervising their employees enough. But aside from congressional testimonies and I guess like Hollywood biopics, he essentially just lays low for 3 years, naturally, as one does after making $40 million.
on GameStop.
So he's, yeah. So he's off the grid for like 3 years. Until the end of his hiatus, which recently was this past Sunday. Let's see. So GME spiked 170%. The company hit a $10 billion market cap. Trading for the stock had to be halted 4 times. And GameStop became one of the 600 largest public companies in the country. And so what was that single post that resulted in this just seismic shift in the stock market that we typically only see right after Nancy Pelosi invests in something? It was a single meme of a gamer leaning forward in a chair. Since then, there have been some subsequent posts of like movie clips, which I guess is his thing to sort of post. But the catalyst that really sparked all of it was a guy leaning forward in a chair caused this seismic shift in the stock market. Clearly, that just shows like the insane amount of power that this one individual has just over our stock market that a meme can cause a stock to have its shares halted 4 times in a single day. But Kitty still hasn't said like what prompted this return. If he's getting in on GameStop again, if he's getting in on an entirely different meme stock, several others of which are on the rise right now. I personally think we should all get in on shares of Bed Bath & Beyond. That's not financial advice, just a gut feeling. but yeah, so he's back, and there have been several takes in response to his return that just range the gamut. On one hand, you have people saying, this is proof the entire economy is rigged and fake. On the other, you have people like former SEC Chair Jay Clayton, who on CNBC was demanding that Kitty answer for this, questioning whether we should, quote, tolerate this in our markets.
It's not insider trading. That's clear. Unless he, and he's trading on his own information. That's why it's not insider trading. But is this something that we should be tolerating in our markets? You know, whether it's legal or illegal, I don't think so.
And yeah, I don't know. My take is just that it shows how powerful Kitty is. Like, this dude with a single meme of a gamer leaning forward in his chair can cause a stock to be halted 4 times. That's absolutely insane. And I think, yeah, it's just, yeah, insane.
I think that it's more closely tethered to the sort of stuff that you were saying. So you mentioned Pelosi, and now you have Jay Clayton sort of, should we allow this? Should we allow this person to what, post a meme? And then a lot of people like him and they want to buy random stocks he didn't even talk about. Should we allow it? Allow what? I think that the whole, you can see the financial experts, not all of them, some of them have a sense of humor, wanting to frame this as, here's this guy manipulating a lot of dumb people. But what I see in the meme stock community is a lot of joy and happiness and excitement. And the idea that this person, this one person, can upend the market in this way, it's more like he's only powerful because people are giving him the power. And they're doing it not because they're stupid, but because they want to feel empowered. I think that when you talk about the Pelosi's and the Claytons of the world, you have a lot of people who have a sense in America that they're not in the driver's seat and there are all these other random people who control everything and they're making lots of money and they never get to do anything. But here you are, this whole thing starts with a short squeeze destroying a company that was trying to destroy another by shorting them to death. And this feels kind of like populist rage to me. It doesn't feel like stupidity. It feels like anger and humor. And that's expressed on the internet the way that everything is expressed on the internet, which is in like clown language and cartoon physics. And so it all looks really stupid because everything on the internet looks stupid. But I think the feelings beneath it are more sort of classically of this moment. It's like the Trump thing and the Bernie Sanders thing and the meme stocks thing. It all feels like the same thing to me. It feels like an American trend against the elites. And I, for one, am glad to see Kitty back. Also not financial advice, and I have no idea what he's up to, but I just think it's fun. I don't know. It makes me feel something. Brandon, are you following the meme stock stuff at all?
Yeah, I mean, I followed it back in 2019. I'm surprised that was 5 years ago now. That's crazy. It feels like 2 years
ago. I can't believe it was before COVID. That is...
I remember it was 2020.
It was 2020.
2021.
It was 2020. Okay, even 4 years.
Really 2021, but yeah.
Yeah, because that was when everybody was like super
stimulus checks,
getting right? Rich. That's what Riley was saying. Yeah. Yes,
I mean, no, you had to be dumb not to make a bunch of money in the stock market at the time.
Yeah, I think it was ripping.
Yeah,
and GameStop was particularly down because it's a physical retail store. Everyone was buying video games online. Like the thesis for the company is still bad. Like the outlook is not good. But you know, people love piling in. I've always thought that he was just going to start a fund. Like Warren Buffett, when he takes a position in Bank of America, he writes an op-ed and puts it in the Wall Street Journal. And Ken Griffin, who's kind of Keith Gill, Roaring Kitty's like, you know, mortal enemy at Citadel, kind of had a similar start. Like he took, I think, $100,000 when he was in college, traded convertible debt through like these really scrappy means, got an edge on the market, grew that to 20, 40 million, and then raised a big fund. And now he manages billions and billions of dollars. I feel like there's so many people who would say, hey, I don't want to be finding out about this meme you know, 2 days later on Twitter when the stock's already mooned, like, Kitty, take my money. You run it. This is what Cathie Wood does with her ETF. She's out there talking about all the stuff she's investing in. Like, this is very common in financial markets. It's just odd that it's decentralized and he's not getting a fee for like the service that he's providing, which, you know, people think is good financial analysis.
Do we know that? I mean, it seems like he, I looked at his Twitter account and his activity that day, Riley. And so he posts the gamer meme and then he posted videos that seem to indicate that he was like coming back or that he was back. I just looked at his YouTube account. He still hasn't posted anything for 3 years, which I guess he just probably stopped after all the hype died down. Is maybe this just like an announcement that he is going to start publishing videos on his YouTube channel? Like, what do we know what his intent is?
Yeah, as of this recording, we still sort of don't. And that's sort of the speculation. So when he first made this initial post of the guy sitting up in the chair, I guess GameStop had made like a brief little rebound. So maybe that's what he's attributing that to. Like, he's just paying attention to this brief little bump. But there's still a lot of speculation. Is he getting back into GameStop? Is he getting into some other, you know, meme thing? Is this related to any of his financial things like altogether? Or is he just posting again? Still don't really know. But just his post alone has already caused like seismic shifts in the stock market. It's crazy.
So yeah, I think the Mike, you mentioned the populist aspect of it. And I think it is populist now because we're in this populist moment, but also that this sort of meme stock frenzy is like a natural evolution of retail because of the internet, essentially. Yeah. I don't think it can happen any other way.
Yes.
And it'll always be that way. People will be piling in and feeling FOMO. And that's just like the nature of, you know, the stock market all the way back to like Tulip Mania or whatever. So I don't think it's that surprising. I think another concurrent thing that happened in 2020 and 2021 was Web3 and like mania around shitcoins, essentially. And that all fell apart. And at the, I don't know, sometime during 2021. But I think what you had is a lot of people cut their teeth in that world who were highly online and are now no longer trusting shitcoins and are just going back into retail. And so you just like, you have this like highly online community of people who can make a big noise when there's like a meme stock around, if that makes sense.
Yeah, but I think it, first of all, it's not even we don't know what's going on right now. We don't know if this is going to be a long-term trend, if we're entering like another meme stock season. That's not really clear to me at all, let alone, you know, what Kitty's thinking. It's not clear that we're going to do another meme stock thing. It would be fun and funny and probably disastrous, but I mean, I don't think so. On the internet, though, that is definitely true. This is, like a lot of things, only possible because you have now millions of people who are connected online, who are sharing the exact same information feed and can move and act instantaneously together. And in the trading, this manifests in lots of ways. This manifests from spreading viral information about a pandemic, for example, that leads to the shutdown of the world, to, in the case of trading, now that you have Robinhood, the market. And you are seeing these huge, I wrote about a lot of this stuff, not this, because this didn't happen yet, the sort of trend of the internet towards mass instantaneous action in a piece called Jump. And this is a version of that, yes, for sure. It's definitely, I think the populism is why this one is happening, but yeah, it's only capable now. And that is the interesting thing about the moment that we're in with the internet, I believe, is as trite as it is, I mean, it was trite 10 years ago to say the internet's changing everything. Now people don't really say that at all, but we're seeing new sort of examples of the internet having fundamentally transformed human civilization much more now. Now that it's more mature, now that everybody's online, now that everybody's connected by their mobile phones, you are seeing really crazy shit. And I wonder, I guess the most interesting thing about this all to me is not even necessarily Kitty or the meme stocks, but what other mass action is now capable that never was before that we haven't seen yet and sort of don't see coming. That's what I always wonder. And that's what I wondered in the case of Jump. Like, what is the, is there a danger that we're not prepared for? I don't know. Sanjana, have you followed the meme stocks?
I have not.
Okay, done.
I was like very, very vaguely aware of even what happened this week, to be completely honest. So, yeah.
Well,
sorry.
Last thoughts, anyone?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure if I think there's like this odd filter on the internet because the way the algorithms work that like posting a big win on the internet will go much more viral than saying, oh, I lost all my money trading a meme stock. And so you get this reinforcing feedback loop of people only posting the positive things. And I think if you look at the full stock chart from the last meme cycle, like it was not this massive wealth transfer from Wall Street to Main Street. It was definitely a situation where, yeah, it was bad for one hedge fund that got bailed out. But like GameStop, it was great for them because they were able to sell a lot of shares during the mania. And if the stock keeps going up, I'm sure they'll sell more shares, which will allow GameStop, the company, to raise more capital. And then they'll just have more money on their balance sheet to do whatever they want with. But I wouldn't bet on this being like a permanent source of wealth transfer from hedge funds to, you know,
but
retail traders.
It will be a permanent source of entertainment.
It will be.
John Coogan and Riley from Pirate Wires. Thanks you guys both for joining. We will see more of you both in the future. It's been real. Adios.
It's been real.